The recordings have started, madam.
Thank you, Benedetta. We have on the call Roland Perry, Mikey O'Connor, Robert Hutchinson, Nacho Amados, James Bladel, Mike Rodenbach, Faisal Shah, and Greg Aaron. And for staff, we have Marika Koenigs and Glenda Saint-Gervais. We have apologies from Margie Milam, who is the other staff support. And we have apologies from George Kirikos, Philip Corwin, Paul Stahura, Martin Sutton, and Gretchen Olive, I believe, who is also attending the IRT in San Francisco.
Okay.
Have I left off anyone? Oh, and I see Greg Ogorek has just joined.
Hello.
Hi, Greg. Well, between the IRT meeting and the anti-phishing working group meeting, we've got a smallish group today. Margie was hoping to give us a presentation today about ICANN scope issues. However, she's still working on getting the ICANN legal staff to sign off on that presentation, which is being prepared not only for us, but also for use in other fora at ICANN. So we will have that presentation next week. So in the meantime, what I thought we would do today is just go ahead and dive into the scope issues identified in the charter and the key sections of the issues report. And I would suggest that one of our goals be to come up with whatever questions you may have for Margie about these issues. Does anybody have any additional thoughts on our agenda for today?
Just a quick one, Greg. It's Mike Rodenbaugh. It'd be nice if Margie could send that around to the group before our next call so we can look at it before she gives it to us, if that's all right.
Yeah, I'll see
I'll relay that
do.
To Margie.
Okay. Well, Marika has put up the language here on the screen. There it goes. The charter asks that we define domain name registration abuse as distinct from abuse arising solely from use of a domain name while it is registered. And we should also identify which aspects of the subject of registration abuse are within ICANN's mission to address, and which are within the set of topics on which ICANN may establish policies that are binding on GTLD registry operators and ICANN accredited registrars. And the task should include an illustrated categorization of known abuses. So in a lot of ways what we're doing is Margie's presentation to us is going to be a primer on what the ICANN legal staff or the ICANN General Counsel has to say about these issues. So that's an important viewpoint, and then we can follow up with whatever additional questions we have. Mike, let me make sure are you joined? Okay. You joined into the room now, Mike?
I am. That's good.
Okay. Now, the issues report contained a note from ICANN legal staff saying what they thought that, discussing a little bit about what that scope was. And it revolved especially around the consensus policies. It said that revised consensus policies concerning the registration of domain names, including abuse in the registration of domain names, that's within scope. But policies involving the use of a domain name unrelated to registration are outside the scope of policies that ICANN could enforce on registries and registrars. The use of the name may be taken into account when establishing or changing the registration policies. So, to me, the first question is, what is registration, and how is that defined? I'm going to throw that open.
Greg, this is James. Can I get a cue?
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to double back just a little bit where it says the task should include an illustrative categorization of known abuses. But that might fail to catch future unknown, yet-to-be-developed types of abuses. And I was just wondering if this should also include maybe an abstraction, whether it's a timeline or the parties involved or the different systems that have to come together in order to execute an abuse, might be able to draw a line in the sand and figure out what future abuses might look like as well and anticipate those types of problems down the road.
Well, I can only add my two cents, which is that in a currently, you know, shifting landscape, I think it'd probably be impossible to guess at all the ones that could happen in the future.
I agree.
And I also think that sometimes defining an abuse ends up being something that you use a process to determine. That's what's happened in some previous PDPs. I'll use the excess deletion as an example, where there's the GNSO had a process. They looked at that issue and they decided, yes, what's happening with how people are using the add grace period, we do determine that it's an abuse. It wasn't meant for that. It harms people. Therefore, it's an abuse, and this is what we're going to do about it. Another thought? James, any?
No, I'm fine. Let's just go forward. I just wanted to not necessarily try to anticipate specific examples of future abuses, but to put some boundaries or triggers around something that could indicate something coming down the road.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to hold up the proof on that. So.
Well, one way to look at things is when you see something new happening, does it fit the definition of abuse that we've come up with? That's one yardstick.
Right, and I just didn't want to make the yardstick too broad or too narrow. That's all.
Right. Right. Okay. Mike, I see you've hit the microphone button.
I have. Roland and I both did. I'm on a Mac, and so I may have discovered that the microphone on the Mac is alive.
No, I think it's related to the raising hand. I guess, Greg, you maybe have approved them raising hand, and then it changes automatically to a microphone.
Ah.
I think. So maybe someone raise your hand. There's no need to do anything otherwise. I think it's when you use audio, it's probably a way to formally give the floor.
Anyway, Roland was first.
Hello. So I'm having a little bit of difficulty with my sound. It's breaking up, but probably at my end. I was just going to raise the issue that we shouldn't get too concerned about abuses that happen at the time of registration, i.e. during the process of registering, and abuses which occur later, maybe perhaps by somebody altering their registration, for example, updating the WHOIS information from a completely legitimate address to a false address. So while I'm sure that we shouldn't be looking overly at the use of the website once it's been registered, I think the the terms of the registration do need to be valid all the way from the moment it's registered to the moment it eventually expires or is deleted.
Okay. Mike, did you want to add something?
I'm unmuting, sorry. Yeah, Mike, I think the only thing I wanted to do was amplify your notion of maybe describing or at least acknowledging some sort of process in what we do. That might address James's point as well, which is some mechanism to be able to respond to new and interesting innovative abuses as they arise, and maybe the thing to do is embody that in some sort of process in our findings.
And one question, I guess, would be, is that the current processes that exist, which is somebody raises an issue at NSO Council, for example, and then there's a discussion about whether or not to explore it in depth using a group like this or a PDP group. Are you suggesting that there be some other process for looking at potential abuses?
Well, perhaps. I think one of the drawbacks to the process that we have today is that we're not terribly nimble in responding. It might be nice to have some sort of process that you could dump an abuse candidate into and have it fairly quickly and consistently evaluated as to whether it's something that needs to be addressed in a policy change. I'm not sure. I see where you're heading, and we are sort of into a murky territory with that. I hadn't thought about the implications of what I was saying.
Greg, can I respond?
Please do.
Maybe something as well in the broader discussion on revising the PDP and policy development context, but one of the options that might be explored in that area is having some kind of like fast-track mechanism where indeed you identify an issue that might be abuse-related. I cannot really wait for 2 years or 1 year, depending on how long a full process is, to be dealt with. So that might be one of the areas where such a process might fit in. But again, that's something that, any ideas on that might fit with the PDP work team that's looking at that.
Okay, anyone else? Well, Mike, if you want to run that one up the flagpole, why don't you memorialize the idea to the list, or however you want to do it.
I can take that.
There is the only thing I can think of that's parallel to that is. There's a new registry process, which is sometimes referred to as the funnel, where if somebody wants to introduce a new process or change a price on a process on an existing one that's mentioned in a registry contract, there's a process for basically fast tracking that.
Well, that might work. That might be a good parallel to draw. Anyway. I'll try and compose something for the list and see what we can
do. Okay. Now, back to Roland, one of Roland's points, registration is not just the act of creating a domain name, but it's a set of actions one can take that a registrar could take, for example, creating names, updating names, transferring names, that are potentially within scope. Because we've had KDPs about all those kinds of things before, grace periods and transfers and all those kinds of things, who is, accuracy, so on. But I have not seen a definition of what registration actually means. In the ICANN context, actually. So I don't know what registration actually is defined as, or if anyone's actually undertaken to define it. Has anybody ever seen anything that would give us some pointers?
Well, I would say that registration, as in registration abuse, is abuse of the registration. And a registration is an entry in a registrar's database.
Or an entry in a registry.
Yeah, and that registration continues forever until it expires or is deleted.
This is Mike.
So that wouldn't, go ahead, Mike.
One place we might go look is transfer TDPs for some language. During the course of some of those conversations, we got pretty precise as to sort of what things would happen when. It could be that there's a link between those that we could draw. I don't have the language in front of me and can't recite it verbatim, but the domain transfers working groups have been sort of nibbling at the edges of that definition. I don't think there is a definition there, but that might be a place to look for.
Another place to look is in the UDRP and in cases that have been decided under the UDRP.
You're suggesting we look at case law?
Well, panelist decisions, but yeah, I think also in the UDRP itself, at the outset, I know it at least defines registration to include renewals. I'd have to go and look at the preamble again, but I also know that subsequent cases have defined registration pretty broadly.
Well, there's, in general, registration, yeah, it consists of a record. That's one way to look at it. Another way of looking at it is in terms of a domain lifetime, which is here are all the things that can happen, you can make happen to a domain name while it is registered or while it is in a registry. For example, you can transfer it. You can update it, you can delete it, you can renew it, you can redeem it. I'm probably missing some. Roland, you had put a note in the chat. Would you like to talk to that?
I'm just doing another one here, actually. But what I'm saying is, we're talking about circumstances that might occur in the future which would cause a registration to become abusive, and one reason why a registration might become abusive is because the rules have changed. I was talking to some people last week at great length about whether or not the emergence of IDNs should in fact, for example, mean that all domain registration whois should have an IDN version of the information as well as a Latin version of the information. But how to what extent could you retrospectively apply that kind of rule to a domain that's already been registered?
And those kinds of situations have indeed come up on occasion. I wonder if there's a useful distinction sometimes between abusive and non-compliant.
Yes, I think everything I'm saying is very synonymous, abusive and non-compliant, I agree.
Because non-compliant means that it's sometimes missing something. In the example you used, that there's no telephone number. But is it abusive? I think part of the thrust of our definition was that abusive does have a component of harm to it a lot of times. Or I guess maybe the practice does, but maybe that, I guess there's the issue of the practice, and then there's the question of the individual case with an individual name.
Is Mikey?
Go ahead.
Why don't we talk about this, the better I'm liking your original notion, which is that maybe we ought to map out the definition of registration as part of our deliverable. And that's something that we also did in the transfers process, just simply documenting the transfer process was useful for us. And it might be that it would also be useful for this group. And I'm wondering if Marika would like to take that on as sort of a cut, at least developing a first draft of what's in and what's outside of registration.
There is actually, I'm just looking it up, there is like a picture of the domain named Lifecycle that was actually developed, I think, some time ago, and it was also used for the post-expiration domain name recovery report, and that might give the group, you know, an overview of the different stages or cycles, and that might serve as a basis for discussion of deciding what is part of registration and what is not. I'm happy to circulate that diagram to the group, and you know, we can discuss if that's served the purpose or whether some more description is needed of that. Would that be helpful?
I'd like to see it. I think I know the one you're referring to. It maps out what can happen to a domain name through its lifetime, from creation through expiration and re-release. Is that the one?
Yeah, correct. It has a different phases.
Do we have a pretty standard one in existence, Marika?
Yeah, there's one that was developed, and I think I adapted it slightly for the post-expiration domain name recovery work, but I can have a look and see which one makes more sense or circulate both of them so people can view them and see whether it covers indeed all the stages and whether it helps facilitate this discussion.
I'd certainly like to see that version. And for the most part, it works the same way, pretty much the same way for all GTLDs, is my recollection. Are there many variations depending upon registry?
I can try. I actually just found a picture. I can try to upload it now if you would like. If I manage to do that.
Sure.
Let me see if I can get that to work. But in the meantime, please continue the discussion.
And I see Gwenghali has joined us. Welcome. And Faisal joined a little while back.
Is that readable for everyone? Can everyone see the picture I just put up?
Yeah, that's great. is Mike.
Yeah, I think you can just ignore the bottom part, the drop catch activity, because I think it was developed originally for, I think, in relation to the AGP work. So, but I think the top part basically outlines the different stages.
Okay, would you like to walk us through it from the beginning?
I'm not sure. I'm the right person for that. But
This is Mike. I think this is part of it. I don't think this is all of it. The stuff that we were talking about, Greg, that you mentioned, things like renewing, transferring, et cetera, et cetera. I think it's a diagram like this that we're after, but I'm not sure that this is the complete picture.
And I guess it might require as well some more of the technical information at the beginning, like, you know, what actually happens at the registry, you know, when the name enters, or where that is considered actual registration or pre-registration, or...
When you renew a name or transfer a name, you just start the registration period again at the beginning on the left, right, Mike?
Well, but you know, there's all that good stuff of changing contacts, changing...
It all happens during the registration period.
Well, no, I mean, well, yes, once it's registered. But, you know, that's not really on this. Oh, yeah, I guess it is. I guess you could put it all in the registered period. Never mind. You're right.
Okay. I see Greg O has raised his hand.
I think Greg...
I'm sorry. I had agreed that I could see it earlier. I didn't clear it. Sorry.
No problem.
But I feel like we're really getting hung up on this question. I'm just not seeing the value of it. Sorry to be obstinate about it, but I mean, look at what the agreements are called with the registrar. The registration agreement, enforced during the entire term of a registration. Where are we going with this discussion?
Mike, I think where we're going is what kinds of actions. I mean, I don't think there's any there's any issue with the fact that a registration has a long lifetime potentially, and it goes from beginning to end. I think what we're talking about is what actions between creation and release, including those, are fair game. Now, if you want to point out places where registration is defined for us in those agreements, that would also be very potentially helpful to us.
Yeah, that's good. Let's go to GoDaddy's registration agreement. I bet they have a nice definition in there.
Well, and GoDaddy's, of course, may be very, very different from what another registrar's agreement is. In fact, does a particular registrar's agreement, is it germane, or is it in the RRA between ICANN and the registrar that we really need to be looking at?
Oh, the RAA.
Hello, is there anybody on the call?
Hello?
Yep, hello.
Yeah.
There's Lance. Yep. We're pondering.
This is Rod Rasmussen. I just managed to get through the intricacies of international stuff to get on the call. My apologies for my tardiness.
Basically, so the RAA defines registered name as a domain name within the domain of a TLD, about which the registry operator maintains data in a registry database.
So that's a registration, but does that give us any limits or guidance about what's within ICANN's scope to say about that?
Greg, this is Marika. Maybe to add, and I'm sure we'll go into more detail when Margie gives her presentation, but I think we need to distinguish between what is in scope for consensus policies and what is in scope of ICANN's mission and GNSO policy making, because those are two different things, and I know there's a lot of confusion around those, because I think what we're now trying to talk about is registration abuse as defined within the concept of consensus policies. But abuse in general might be in scope of ICANN's mission and policy making, but not necessarily in scope for consensus policies. So,
exactly.
And as I said, I think Margie's presentation will point it out more clearly and really go from the start to the end on this, but just to make clear that we're talking about consensus policies here.
Right. And what's weird is in the consensus policies, I don't know if there's a good definition of what a registration is. So we need guidance on that.
This is Mikey.
Go ahead.
Either that or we get to create the guidance. That's essentially what we ran into in the other context, was that there wasn't really a good description of what this was. And so maybe the action to take out of this and then move on to other things would be to just acknowledge that we have a little bit of a vacuum there, and we need to do some research to find out, A, what's available, and B, if nothing's available, decide whether we need to develop it.
I find it fascinating in and of itself that there is no definition of what a registration actually is.
I do too.
Which might be worth pointing out.
But you know, I don't think we can do it on this call. I think I think the point that you raised is right on the money, which is that we definitely need that, and we've outlined a couple of different approaches to getting it.
Greg, I will also try to see whether ICANN Legal has any further information on this, or if they are aware of any definitions that are in any other ICANN documents relating to that.
Yeah, because I'm, and we should also ask Margie to have this as part of her presentation.
Okay.
Because there's good definition of what there's some definition of what consensus policy is, and the areas that can be discussed in. I'm assuming that's going to be part of her presentation. It has to be. But what I've seen in those definitions is it's a little unclear the areas in which a consensus policy can be applied. It can be applied to registrations, they're telling us, but they don't say what a registration actually means. Other than the general idea that we all understand, which is it's creation and manipulation of domain name records and the lifetime operations and that kind of thing. So,
and then of course there's the UDRP, which is a consensus policy, which clearly deals with use.
But in relation to the registration, no?
No. This is in connection with a dispute between you and any party over the registration and use of a domain name registered by you.
Yes, but it's the two elements. I mean, I think that's what the consensus policy specifies. It has to be registration and abuse, not just only abuse. No?
That's an interesting topic, because I've heard people say that UDRP is actually not a consensus policy, although it is listed as such on ICANN's website.
That is interesting. Been assumed as such for 10 years.
And that was, of course, long before most of our times.
Right.
thank God. that's actually a good question. Maybe that's one of the questions we should ask, because that's an ancient bit of history, actually. Maybe one of the things we ought to be doing right now is creating a list of questions for Margie to make sure that we cover during her presentation. One of which would be to make sure that we get a good walkthrough of the consensus policy scope. We have this issue of registration and what that means. Any others?
Mikey, I think that's a pretty substantial list out of which may fall a bunch of other questions. One of the things about scope is that it's all about edges between that which is in scope and that which is out of scope. And one of the difficulties that we're facing is that the edge right now is blurry. What we're trying to get to is a sharp edge. And in so doing, we may discover all sorts of other stuff.
Yeah. And anyway, I'm thinking we have to dig down into these things so at least our group has some common vocabulary and some common understanding. Even then, the gray areas, some of them may persist, which, you know, it might be unavoidable. But at least what we can do is, if we don't see some clarity on those, at least we can call them out in our report and say, here's some potentially unsettled spots. And they can be dealt with in some fashion if they become problematic. I mean, what do you think of that, Mikey?
I think that's right. I think, in a way, what we may be looking at is a series of exercises, kind of like the one we went through with the definition of abuse, where we work and work and work and come up with a very sharp, very tight definition that can be used in all sorts of other places. It's almost like building toolkits for subsequent policymakers. And the fact that we've uncovered a pretty big, vague area in your registration definition, I think, is great. We can tighten that up. That will help lots of other folks, I think.
And just for the record, I think you're making a mountain out of a molehill, as I said before. Pretty clear what registration is. I just feel like we're wasting a lot of time on this question.
What do you think it is, Mike? Just share with us how you would define registration.
Just like the registration of a phone number. You know, when you go and you sign up, you register a phone number, you own it, it's registered to you until it's not anymore for some reason. Either the operator turns it off or you cancel your service.
Okay. But then the follow-on is, what about that registration can policymaking, specifically consensus policymaking, say about that registration?
I don't understand the question.
Well, we're trying to figure out what...
Are you talking about abuses of the registration? Which abuses can I can do something about?
Abuses in the registration of domain names.
Correct. I think,
somebody help me out here?
Well, I've diverged from you and others on this all along, Greg, is I think registration and use are inseparable. You're using a domain registration when you use a domain name.
Ah, this is Mikey. I think that may be the fundamental difference, or at least one of them, is that I think some people view it that way, Mike, and others would say, no, it's only in the registering process that we're focusing. It's not in the ongoing use of the registered domain.
And I just think that's been refuted consistently by ICANN, various ICANN groups throughout the history of ICANN. I mean, look at what the SBAC does with all their different reports. They're not talking about the registration process. They're talking about things that happen while the name is being used.
Well, I think that's a good one for our list of questions for Mark. Because clearly that's an answerable scope question, but there are two answers at least right now. And I think we need to get to one.
And you know, with FSAC, for example, a lot of what they write about is not policy related. But a lot of what they write about is, here are things going out in the world. And they make recommendations, but they're not always recommendations for consensus policy making.
What they are
sometimes are things people ought to be thinking about, or things businesses ought to be doing, or registrars ought to be doing, what have you. I mean, they have an ambit which is pretty large, and they kind of do whatever they feel they need to comment on. But it's different than what happens within GNSO.
You're right. The two bodies have different functions. FSAC's function is not to make policy. The GNSO's is.
This is Mike. I think another way to think of this, Mike, is if our scope was to deal with all abuses related to domain names that are registered, then our title would be domain name abuse, not registration abuse. And I think that's why Greg's question is so important. It's because our title is registration abuse. Thus, we
I think you're putting too much emphasis on the title of the group. Look at registration policies. They're called registration agreements, but they clearly prescribe how names are going to be used.
Again, it's just a tasty scope issue that is worth our time to figure out. I'm not.
Oh, right, but it's like. Really, but the problem is you've got. All down the line, you've got ICANN itself making rules about use with the UDRP and otherwise with some of their staff. I forget who the new guy is, Greg, something or other that works with Kim Davies. They're dealing with abuse of domain names all the time. That's their entire job. Then you've got the registry agreements, which prescribe how names can be used, provide indemnification back to the registry in the event that names are abused. You've got the registration agreements between registrars and registrants that do exactly the same thing, and yet we've got a small group of people trying to make policy who are just ignoring these realities that have existed for 10 years.
But I think that's why scope is so important, Mike. We need to get that defined. That's why it's worth the discussion.
I think it was discussed a long time ago and resolved, and people are trying to bring it up again in order to narrow what can happen going forward.
I don't know that it's necessarily in order to narrow what can happen. It's in order to provide ourselves a working definition as a group that we can actually accomplish.
So that's why I hear you, and that's definitely a good point, okay? So that's why I thought we resolved last time to go through the list of abuses and start talking about those rather than continuing around and around on this issue.
Well, and Mike, to clarify, the idea was first we have to understand what is in scope and out of scope before we can look at individual cases and decide whether the GNSO and ICANN can do anything about them. And, I mean, I think what you've said is that registration and abuse are inseparable. I think the charter of this group says something a little different, which is that the use of a domain can be taken into account, but they're not inseparable.
The charter doesn't make any decisions. The charter just puts an issue to the group to discuss and decide.
Well, and what we're trying to figure out is why, you know, one of the questions is why discuss and make recommendations for policy if those recommendations are going to be out of scope. That's one of the things we've been asked to do, is figure out, discuss whether an individual problem, a particular problem, is in scope or not.
And now you're done.
That's why we're working on understanding the scope and definitional issues rather than diving into individual.
I think that's where we get back to the confusion Marika pointed out early on in this call. The difference between the two types of scope you're talking about, because ICANN's scope is much broader than consensus policy scope, yet even GNSO working groups are completely able to discuss issues that are outside of consensus policy scope and come to other recommendations about best practices or whatever.
Yes, I agree completely. However, those recommendations will not be for consensus policies. They might be for other things like best practices, right?
Right.
Exactly. But we can't, what I think our course is we have to understand what's in scope for consensus policy making before trying to determine whether we should recommend a policy on any given case.
And that's where I completely disagree. I think you're putting the cart before the horse. Working groups should never be limited at the outset. You make that determination of what's in scope or out of scope later once you get the range of alternatives.
This is Mikey. I have to speak in vehement opposition. I was the one that wrote that long rant back when I was the ill-fated Fast Flux chair, where we had a completely out-of-control scope situation that really had to be addressed before the group could proceed. And I have to stand in opposition to you on that, Mike.
I know. You and I have agreed the entire time on that issue, Mike.
Well, this is the same sort of thing. If we don't get the scope, both, I agree, there's two scope boundaries. There's the working group scope boundaries and there's the ICANN scope boundaries. But if we don't get those sharply defined before we start, we'll make this quagmire look like a piece of cake in comparison.
It's impossible to clarify it. For the reason James said, his first comments on this call, you're always going to have new things that come up.
No, I don't think that's true. I don't think that means that you can't clarify a scope. I think it may mean that you have to put other processes in place. But I really vehemently disagree with the idea of proceeding on a project without clear scope boundaries.
You're trying to change over a decade of ICANN policymaking, too, which is admirable, but I just...
I see James's hand raised.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. I was looking for an appropriate time to jump in, but I just want to echo some of the things that have already been said. I think that the distinction between registration abuse and use abuse, or post-registration abuse, is specifically one of the issues that we've been asked to examine from the charter. And I think that, to Mike's credit, he's correct in that that it needs to be open-ended or sufficiently defined in the abstract so that we can address future issues. But I don't want that to imply that I'm supporting the idea that we should proceed without a clear definition of scope, because as the new ill-fated chair of the Fast Flex Working Group, I can tell you that that's been just a fatal issue for that group, and I would hate to see this group go off target like that as well. And I think that the definition is also, that idea is also supported by the fact that registration agreements can be more restrictive on a per-registrar basis and grant registrars more latitude outside of consensus policy in dealing with post-registration abuse. I think that kind of lends to the idea that they are distinct. That's all I wanted to add to that.
James, I want to understand that last point. I think I do, but let me see if I got it right. You're saying basically that registrars, I suppose by extension registries too, although I'm not sure, you tell me, but at least registrars are entitled to have basically whatever provisions they want in place with registrants, regardless of ICANN policy, so long as it's consistent with any consensus policies and with the RAA.
Well, okay, let me be careful in answering, because I'm not I don't have your legal background, Mike, but what I understand is that the registration agreements can be can have a standard minimal common set of requirements, but registrars can add their own requirements to that to make it more restrictive and give themselves more tools in addressing abuse issues. So, for example, if an abuse issue were reported to GoDaddy and we looked at it and we saw that it were, for example, a bad situation and weren't clear on how to proceed under ICANN consensus policy or the RAA, we could still find a problem where the use was sideways with our registration abuse and suspend the domain.
I agree with that completely. I think this group is really, that's part of our task, really, is to find out what consistencies or inconsistencies there are in those policies now, and whether the minimum set that we have now, which is basically the RAA, ought to be changed.
Okay, but the risk in doing that, Mike, is that if we were to move, let's say, move some of that from some of that registrar latitude and creating new consensus policy or making the new consensus policy more restrictive or broad, we take away some of the responsiveness that registrars can have on an individual basis. Would you agree with that?
No, not necessarily. I think you're just, what you're doing is you're just raising the minimum standard, because right now today you've got registrars like GoDaddy and others that obviously do a lot better job in response to abuse, have much more thorough policies in response to abuse than a lot of the other registrars out there that are, you know, very little more than shell companies in many cases. And so what I believe is that it's in registrars like GoDaddy's best interest to actually raise that bar so we have a more level competitive playing field.
Well, possibly, but it could also be seen as, excuse me, as bringing everyone down to the lowest common denominator. If
no,
we had to move it into a more cumbersome
premise that you started with here, which is that registrars are free to go above and beyond.
Okay, we're free to go above and beyond, but what my point is that if we replace that latitude and discretion with something that's a little more cumbersome and defined within the scope of ICANN, then everyone has to behave in a consistent manner, which may not be up to what we're currently doing.
That doesn't mean that you have to do less. You wouldn't have to change, GoDaddy wouldn't have to change its policies at all, probably. But it's all the other guys that aren't doing anything that might have to implement some policies.
This is Mikey. It seems to me that this conversation's another really good one for the list of questions for Margie.
I agree. I just don't want people to think that Margie's going to come with all the answers. I know Margie. I know she would like to, but I mean, come on. And remember, that's just ICANN staff's point of view too, which is certainly not necessarily the right one.
No, I'm not trying to go there. I guess what I'm trying to say is that I think you've just kicked over a whole another delightful, complex discussion that we need to have and resolve. And, you know, the current list of questions that's going to Margie isn't, I think, going to get answered by Margie, but it would be nice to get a briefing on some of the toolkit that we've got to, available to us to answer some of those questions.
So how would you state that question? And by the way, we're coming up on the top of the hour here.
Yeah.
Maybe what we ought to do, since we're starting to run out of time, is one of our goals was to come up with a list of questions which we will put to Margie and which we want to continue to discuss. As Mike R. says, and as I mentioned at the top of the call, these are going to be questions to ICANN staff, which is not the be-all and end-all of all things, of course.
They're pretty darn
what I would like you to do, our assignment for the next couple of days is go on the list and let's post these questions so we can have a whole list of them, and we can get them to Margie so she can work on pulling out whatever references or doing additional research, whatever, so we can have a really meaty discussion during our next call. I feel like the working group kind of woke up and got into it today. Everything was kind of quiet. The list was quiet. We had good conversation today, which is what I've been waiting for. So I encourage this. This is a very good conversation. I want to encourage everybody to keep putting your thoughts out there. Make your arguments. State your questions. I want to keep this discussion going. It's very important that we have this good participation. Mike, do you want to specifically work on that, and maybe James, this issue that came up at the end of the call about above and beyond and the minimums and that kind of thing? Can you guys try to crystallize that into some questions that we can discuss?
Sure.
And also send up to Margie if we want.
I really want to welcome James, the new ill-fated chair of the Fast Flux Group, to our team. But yeah, we'll do that. James, can you join us on that?
Yeah, I will try to carve out some time for that. Yeah, you bet.
Okay, that would be great. I appreciate you three working on that one. And everybody else, think about these issues. Let's put up questions and have discussion on the list. And then in 2 weeks, we're supposed to have another call. Margie feels confident that she'll have what she needs so she can make her presentation. And then we'll drill her with whatever questions you come up with.
Greg, this is Marika. Just a question. Isn't in 2 weeks, is that a public holiday in the U.S.?
Let's see.
I have on our shared calendar that it's Memorial Day.
It is Memorial Day.
Ooh, you are ahead of me for sure.
Well, I'm not going to take the question.
No, I mean none of us in the U.S. will probably be available. Which raises the question: should we change the meeting day? Because we don't have that. I think we should have a meeting. We certainly don't have a lot of meetings before Sydney. I'll tell you what, maybe offline. Go ahead.
Oh, I just wanted to pose a possible unpopular response, which is that we have so many things that are coming due between now and Sydney, and I don't believe that there are any concrete milestones like an interim report or whatnot from this group that are due between now and Sydney. So I would just recommend if a holiday quirk of the calendar or lack of a quorum due to a holiday causes us to miss a meeting, I would just say that we just go on with that rather than trying to shoehorn it in somewhere else. I may be speaking personally here, but I know that Marika and staff probably feel the same way. So,
well, just to note that there is, although there's no formal requirement for a report, there is a requirement to provide an update within 90 days, which I think falls somewhere just before Sydney to the council. So it would be good if the group has something to show at that stage, although it doesn't need to be a final report, of course.
Corrected. Sorry about that.
Yeah. I'm going to put this question up to the list, and I personally am happy to try to reschedule it. I'll try to attend another day. Noting, as James says, that people do have a lot of commitments they have to make. But on the other hand, we're only meeting every other week rather than weekly, like a lot of groups do. Let me work with Marika and Glenn offline, and what we might do is a poll, and see if there's an alternate time that's comfortable for as many people as possible.
And conceivably, we could just double up and do it on June 1st and on June 8th.
Just to point out as well, actually, June 1 is a holiday in Europe, a public holiday. Sorry.
Oh, well, no, I didn't know that. So, okay, never mind.
But, I mean, there are less, I think, less participants from Europe, so if people want to go ahead that day, I mean.
Probably also double up the 8th and the 15th then, possibly. But,
okay.
Anyway, I'll leave it. Never mind. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, we'll tell you what. Let's take it offline. We'll take it to the list, and we'll poll folks about availability.
Oh, what a pain it is.
Because then the 15th is like June. That's like June 15th, and that's getting pretty close to travel for other things.
Yep.
Just moving it to the Tuesday. Would that be an option? Just suggesting here. I mean, it's same time. Just a day later, just a quick poll maybe of those now on the call, and then we can maybe suggest it to others.
That would work for me. The 26th would work for me.
That's not bad for me.
Yeah, it's not bad for me. And there's been a lot of people who missed the last couple of meetings, too, so another day might be better anyway.
No, I don't think there's going to be any great day until the IRT is done.
They're done this week, pretty much.
Well, Greg, we can work offline and see.
Yeah, we'll put our heads together. Maybe we'll do a doodle or something, and we'll see what we can do. But anyway, I'm cognizant that we're out of our meeting frame for today. So anyway, I really do appreciate everybody who could make it today. Thanks for the good discussion. Let's please keep that momentum going, and I look forward to conversing with you more on the list about these questions.
Thanks, Greg.
Great job, Greg. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, everybody, for your help.
Thanks, Greg.
Good week. Bye.